Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's Thursday. This is live. It really, really is. And I'm thrilled to be here. I hate being away from the microphone. But first things first, this is an Agnes update. First of all, thanks, seriously, thanks for all of you who have sent along your warm good wishes and your kind thoughts for Agnes as she prepares for surgery. She's been touched by all of your thoughts and remarks. She is at present resting uncomfortably. I say that because she hasn't had the surgery yet. After waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, we found out yesterday, which was, I guess, the only time we could find out, that, in fact, no, she couldn't have the surgery because her hematic red hemoglobin, red blood count, whatever, was too low to do the job. So for the last couple of days, last day or so, it seems like two, maybe three a month, I don't know, I've been force-feeding her raw liver. No, not that either. But seriously, she's had some, like, iron injections and stuff to try to raise her hemoglobin or red blood count or hematocrit, whatever, all up to where it needs to be. And so now the current situation is that it is now rescheduled for next Wednesday. Next Wednesday. Which would be the 25th? Yes, the 25th. So that's next Wednesday will be a bust as well. But eventually it will come off. It will happen. And she will need your good thoughts, your wishes, and even your prayers then as much as she did this week. I don't know. I've never had really any major surgery. I can't get my head around it. You know, my job is only to sit around here and worry. But I can't imagine what it would be like to, well, okay, I'm going to, next Wednesday, they're going to take a knife and they're going to cut me open. And then Wednesday rolls around and they go, ha ha, joke's on you. We're not gonna. You got your blood screwed up. We're going to do it next Wednesday. What's that like inside your skull? It's got to be nasty. It's got to be unpleasant. So that's where Agnes is right now. That's why I said she's resting uncomfortably. So next Wednesday, no show. We'll do show Monday, Tuesday, tomorrow. Let's see, Friday, Monday, Tuesday. Hopefully Thursday, assuming everything goes well and according to plan. And Friday, we'll take the same approach. But we're here. I'm here. You're there. It's tonight, it's Thursday, and I got one thing to say. I'm sick of the mosque story. Maybe that makes me sound shallow. But I am. I'm just tired as hell of the mosque story. Because in the couple of days I've been off air, I've been sitting here and I save a story here and I save a story there, and I go, oh, that's a good one, that's a good one, that's a good one, that's a good one. And they are, they're all good ones. But, so what? Doesn't matter. The only thing we're talking about is the mosque story. The not-a-mosque story. The Muslim YMCA story that they don't have enough money to finish buying the building with. Not a story, not a mosque. And in a way, it sort of reminds me of... I've been sort of casting about for a simile, a metaphor, something like that. I actually know the difference. God knows right-wingers don't. No, they only know how to control media and control the message. But I've been casting about for a metaphor or a simile to sort of draw a little word picture of what this whole not a mosque controversy, tempest in a teapot, mountain out of molehill, amounts to. Anybody? Ever been on a blind date? Yes, I have. Way back pre-Agnes. I've been on a blind date. And I'm sure a lot of the others of us have too. And if you've ever been on more than one, odds are you've been on a bad one. Not that the human being sitting across from you is a bad person, but there's just no chemistry, no match, no magic, no nothing. And no matter, and one of the ways that you know that you're on a bad blind date is that no matter what you try to talk about, it keeps coming around to what the other person wants to talk about. I like motorcycling. Do you like motorcycling? Let's talk about something fun, like clowns. Oh, okay. I like the circus. Not those kind of clowns. I like other clowns. That's what this is with the whole not a mosque, not a controversy. Because it doesn't matter what the right wing says about this not a mosque, not a controversy. We keep shooting it down, and it keeps getting back up. I mean, we're going to have to use silver goddamn bullets in a little bit. Drive a stake through its heart. How many people can get absolutely foobarred on the jagged rocks of this not a mosque, not a controversy? Let's see. Howard Dean has screwed up. Harry Reid has screwed up. Barack Obama has screwed up. And from some people's standpoint, I have probably screwed up. All over something that doesn't even exist. Bless his heart, at least Al Franken was funny about it. At least Al Franken was funny about it. He gave a little address today. And said that, he was talking at the Democratic County Chairman's Association breakfast yesterday in Illinois. And Senator Al Franken said that the whole opposition to the not a mosque, even Think Progress is reporting mosque, one of the most disgraceful things that I've heard. Okay. But finally, some funny. He said, I don't know how many of you have been to New York, but if a building is two blocks away from anything, you can't see it. It's a community center. They're going to have a gym. They're going to have point guards. Muslim point guards! And the crowd laughed. Similar, I would say, to what I've been saying for, a couple of weeks now. Yeah, we can't have any dadgum Muslims on dadgum cardio glides trying to help their dadgum hearts. You know? But we're talking about it. And I'm still talking about it. That's because in that god-awful blind date that is the ongoing dysfunctional relationship between progressives, liberals, otherwise known as decent human beings, and the right wing, we always wind up talking about what they want to talk about. Let's talk about clowns. Let's talk about something fun, like clowns. So we talk about clowns. Really, is there a better metaphor? Is there a better simile? I think this is a simile, isn't it? And I said I knew the difference. Huh! Could we, because, you know, see...
We want to talk about the deficit.
Okay, we'll talk about the deficit. See, the deficit, it doesn't matter because you said it didn't matter for 8 years under George Bush. I want to talk about clowns. Back to the clowns. You know, they've got a nice little car. I hated it when you bailed out Detroit, you liberals. That Kenyan you elected president, that Muslim. I hated it when you bailed out Detroit. Took taxpayers' money. Those are not funny clowns.
It's going to be within sight of the hallowed ground of 9/11. We can't have that.
So then Matt Osborne points out that there are 7 sushi joints inside of Pearl Harbor, for instance. John Stewart does a beautiful video job of deconstructing the whole thing to show that there really isn't much hallowed about a former Burlington Coat Factory outlet.
But they keep coming back up. They keep coming. I said clowns! I want to talk about clowns! And when are they bringing my tiramisu? That's what this is. We could talk about Social Security. Because it's dead. Probably won't pay any benefits next month, you know. Well, no, it's not. I want to talk about the mosque.
Because every time you refute them and you think you've run them to ground, they just stand back up.
I want to talk about clowns.
And that is this phony baloney controversy. It is so very much crap.
It's just junk.
I think I sort of crossed a boundary of sorts earlier today when I read the article about how they don't even have a little bit of the money necessary to build this thing. From Politico today, mosque, a long shot to be built. Not a mosque. But that's okay. Howard Dean's thrown himself on the rocks. Barack Obama. You know, all of these are self-inflicted wounds. You know, you get the pistol out and you kind of sight down. You know, you do the Gary Cooper thing. Lick the sight and make sure it cuts down on the haze. And you look down the barrel, and you sight down the barrel, bang, right in your own foot. Do any of these
people have staffs, fact checkers, smart people who can look up and read the same stuff I read? And look, it doesn't exist. They don't have the money. It's not even a mosque. It's a community center. That's why they're calling it Cordoba House and not a masjid.
It's got a prayer room, you know, like hospitals have prayer rooms. But it's also got a gym. It's got an auditorium where they can have a lecture series. Heart-healthy Muslims, a way forward, you know.
But no, I don't want to talk about clowns. Let's talk about clowns. Let's talk about something fun.
And so I've reached that part of the blind date where I just don't, I mean, I just want it to end. I'm gonna metaphorically go off to the men's room and just peek out periodically to see if she's gone yet! But she's the right wing and they never go. No, no, no. Oh, look, we brought some soldiers home from Iraq. News Ninja Susan scooped the rest of the internet with that. Yeah, we're bringing allegedly the last of the troops home from Iraq. Okay, so it's not really the last of the troops, and we're certainly not out of Iraq, and Iraq is now staffed by a wild-eyed army of corporatist mercenaries.
but, you know, we're making a show of coming home from Iraq.
I'm going to talk about something fun, like clowns or mosques.
Jesus. Did you see the latest poll numbers? Now, I predicted this after President Obama got out his foot-shooting gun on Friday and just waded right into the not-a-mosque, not-a-controversy, pitched himself onto those jagged right-wing rocks, and said, you know, we're going to see a 15-point increase in the number of Americans who pretty sure he's a Muslim, probably a terrorist, and most certainly Kenyan. What did I see this morning? From the Pew Research Center, not the Pew, Le Pew, Pepe Le Pew is my name. No, from the Pew Research Center for the People in the Press, headline, August 19th, 2010, growing number of Americans say Obama is a Muslim. You know, I wouldn't want to make anybody nervous or anything, but I'd say the second term is looking real iffy right now. A substantial and growing number of Americans say that Barack Obama is a Muslim, while the proportion saying he is a Christian has declined. More than a year and a half into his presidency, a plurality of the public says they do not know what religion Obama follows. A plurality. A new national survey by the Pew Research Center finds that nearly one in five Americans, 18%, now say Obama is a Muslim, up from 11% in March 2009. See, you give to stupid long enough to grow, and it grows to stupid. It hurts us to stupid. 11% March 2009. But, you know, he's had a year on the job, and we've had a year of right-wing smears, and now it's up to, 18%, nearly one-fifth of the American population. He's a Muslim? I think he was born in Muslim land. I don't know where that Kenya is. Let's talk about something fun. Let's talk about clowns. Only about one-third of adults, 34%, say Obama is a Christian, down sharply from 48% in 2009. Huh, how about that? Up 7% Muslim, down, what? Yeah, down 14% Christian. I wonder what the other 3% think he is. Communist? Fully 43% say they do not know what Obama's religion is. Sadly, the Pew Center for the People and the Press did not include in their survey data a who gives a f- question. Or, and are you really serious? Are you wasting my time to ask me what I think his religion is when the Constitution says there shall be no religious test for holding office in the United States? Are you really that goddamn dim? Nope, that question was not included. Now, here's the part that everybody knows, but it has to be read anyway. The view that Obama is a Muslim is more widespread among his political opponents than among his backers. Roughly a third of conservative Republicans, that would be people with an IQ below 70, say Obama is a Muslim. That roughly equates with the 30% of those who disapprove of Obama's job performance. If he was out there rescuing little kitties from burning trees, they would complain because they figured the cat would now have to become a Muslim. But even among many of his supporters and allies, less than half now say Obama is a Christian. Jesus, if only he wasn't, we might get something done. Among Democrats, for instance, 46% say Obama is a Christian, down from 55% in March of 2009. And you know what? The data may be skewed in that regard. Some of us may not give a damn. Some may hope that he's not. And that doesn't necessarily reflect a negative number on the Democratic side. The belief that Obama is a Muslim has increased most sharply among Republicans, up 14% since 2009, like we noted. Especially conservative Republicans, up 16 points. But there's an oopsie in here. The number of independents who say Obama is a Muslim has also increased significantly. That's gone up 8 points. When asked how they learned about Obama's religion, and this is a funny one, in an open-ended question, 60% of those who say Obama is a Muslim cite the media. 16% cite television. 1 in 10 say it was they learned of this way through his own words and behavior. You know, that going out on the White House lawn and laying the rug down and praying toward Mecca 5 times a day. You just can't avoid it. It's kind of hard to pretend it's not there, except it's not there. Let's talk about something fun, like clowns. Now, there is a punchline in this story that isn't in this story. Kinda. The data for this was a survey that ended on August the 5th. August the 5th. The survey was conducted between the end of July and August the 5th. Now, President Obama threw himself onto the jagged, sharp, nasty teeth of this ugly little ginned-up controversy, this fake load of horse manure. Let's see, he did this, 13th. Oh, hey, look! Oh, it's all making sense now. Barack Obama threw himself under the horns of this dilemma on Friday the 13th. Shoot me. He does not have to take me home and shoot me later. He can shoot me now. Shoot me. Just don't! Makes sense, doesn't it? But no, the data for all of this was gathered before that Friday, that fateful Friday the 13th. So, what does that mean? It means, among other things, that I have to haul the threadbare and moth-eaten old wizard's cloak, prophecy garb out of the closet again. You know, the one with the velvet that's where the velvet's rubbed off in spots, and the faded and shredded moons and stars are just hanging by an applique thread here and there. Bring out my trusty magic eight ball and say, "Well, I did it again." That data was gathered, let's see, 13 minus 5, yeah, 8 full days, you know, that showed the dramatic uptick in he's a Muslim. That data was gathered 8 full days before Friday the 13th of August, when Barack Obama came out and licked his sights all Gary Cooper like, hey, it cuts down on the hedge, and bam, right in the foot. Sweet Jeebus, what will the number be when the Pew Center, what are we calling them again? The Pew Center for the People and the Press. What will the number be when the Pew Center for the People and the Press ask that question again? The nonspecific, not particularly mathematically precise answer is through the damned roof. Which, like I said, keeps making that second term look a little, well, you know, iffy. God. And I'd probably sound, if I was to go back and air check this right now, I would sound like it doesn't matter to me what happens in 2012. Well, here, let me make it abundantly clear. It does. And just to be even clearer about it, it's breaking my damned heart. But let's even be more clear. My heart is not broken over things that I've done. It's not broken over things that you have done, or we together have done, or that liberals and progressives, you know, decent, normal, thinking, reasonable human beings, in other words, have done. I am grieving. I'm grieving for the load of belted ammunition, feed me, Mandrake, that the Democratic Party and Barack Obama and the so-called leadership are feeding into a goddamn machine gun that is blowing away their own feet. Like that little target that hangs in the carnival sideshow midway. All you got to do is shoot out the target, son. And look, you can win that teddy bear full of toxic waste from China. Because, see, that's the trick. That's the funny part. Oh, that's the real side splitter. You and I, we deserve better. And I've got an example of it. Sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat a bunch of them, it'll give you the bellyache. I've got an example of it, and it'll have you green at the gills. Oh, yes, it will. Yes, it will. So we'll take a little break here. It's the bottom of the hour, after all. It's awfully good to be back. I don't mean to just come back pissing and moaning. And this isn't really pissing and moaning. You know, I wish I'm so happy. I'm so happy that you're with me and that we get to spend time together, but I would give anything if we were in our millions, because there are millions who think like you and I think, who are, in other words, normal and decent and upstanding, i.e. liberal and progressive, so that maybe we could begin to speak with one voice. You know, there's that old gag out there about not knowing the first law of holes, and this whole not a mosque, not a controversy appears to have a lot to do with that. To wit, the first law of holes states that when you're in one, you stop digging. Who, on Friday the 13th of August 2010, who decided it would be a good idea to hand Barack Obama the goddamn shovel? Just asking. Howard Dean, were you just on fire over this? What? Harry Reid. Oh, but I got issues with Harry. Like I said, there's more to come. And there's all kinds of stuff out there tonight. I couldn't get a show post written for this evening, and I apologize to Susan, because all I could do, well, first of all, I was a little addled from the last couple of days, but all I could do was sit here and go, I don't want to talk about the not a mosque. I felt like Jack Nicholson, The Shining. Don't want to talk about the mosque. Don't want to talk about the mosque. Don't want to talk about the mosque. Don't want to talk. And here it is. I've just spent 28 minutes doing it. But indirectly. We don't have to. And here, let's see if I can come to some sort of a conclusion. We don't have to talk about everything the right wing wants to talk about. Sometimes you do. You go to the men's room and you peek out until you see that she's gone. Or you just walk out in your own right. No matter how many times she says, let's talk about something fun, like clowns. You don't have to! We don't have to. Now, this has dawned on me, and I am a bear of very little brain. I guess the smart folks think that they're finally going to come to that one argument, that one piece of data, where the right-wingers look up. Oh, okay, well, that one, yeah, you got us. God bless America! That's not how they operate. They sit there swilling bad liquor, stump liquor, and they brawl amongst themselves, and if you, little green sprout, walk in there, they will tear you limb from limb. And talk about how they're doing it for Jeebus, because they love America. And I would say probably something on the order of 90% of our side hasn't figured that out yet. That leaves us, you, me, we, the Horn family, very special individuals indeed. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Emphasis on listener-supported. Not a lot of that happening right now. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. It's getting lonely. So is the snail mail address. But we'll soldier along because somebody's got to say these things, and I guess it has to be us. This is the Horn. I'm Bob.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. And their speech is growing increasingly unkind. Running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss them people's ass. You may call me old fashioned, that don't fit my picture of a true democracy. It feels like I am living in this wasteland.
You know, sometime I would like to be somewhere that Iris DeMint is performing that song live, and I would love to hear, you know, that part where the singer takes the microphone and sticks it out toward the audience like it's like that microphone's going to pick up everybody. I'd love to hear a crowd of, you know, 20,000 or so screaming, "Living in the wasteland of the free." What an anthem that is. Every once in a while, a rock and roll song comes along, or a country song, or whatever, with anthemic qualities to it. And Lord, if that ain't got it. And how old is the song? Jesus. I mean, it's been around a while. But what of our current problems aren't embodied inside inside that lyric? I could just set that thing on loop and just shut the microphone off and let it go for 3 hours until it all sunk in. But, you know, sadly, y'all aren't the ones that it needs to sink in for. Now, I don't want to do anything hateful to anybody, you know, like they do down at Guantanamo where they play the Barney the Goddamn Dinosaur anthem 24-7 at some poor kid who was picked up on the battlefield at 15 who's just been waterboarded. No. I'd like to print off the lyrics and have 15 or 20 copies and say, "Here, Rahm Emanuel. Take one, Mr. Obama." Yes, you. You, Robert Gibbs. Yes, you, Mr. Gibbs. Howard Dean, come here. Yeah, you too. You threw yourselves on these rocks. Harry Reid, if you can find somebody to pick you up and carry you over, seeing as you have no goddamn spine, here, you take a copy too. And then run out of the room, lock the door, and turn the music on. And every couple of hours come in and say, "Anybody get it?" And, you know, watch Barack Obama say, "Well, it has an excellent beat, and I think we could dance to it." And hear Rahm Emanuel say, "Has she got any money?" And just look over in the corner where poor spineless Harry Reid is sort of just moaning. Michael writing in from Norway, "Let's talk about clowns." Apparently that got to Michael. "Yeah, I've been on such a date, but unlike you, who seems mostly just got irritated, I got frightened of the creature." Welcome back, Bob. Thanks, Michael. No, make no mistake, those blind dates are scary. Because after a while, you begin to figure, you know, that if you're not careful, and, you know, no way you're leaving the restaurant together, because the next thing you know, you've got the hobbles on your ankles and the wooden blocks, and, you know, she's got the hammer. "I just love you, and want you to stay with me forever." Whack! Oh! But I told you that I have something to add to this miserable business. Something that is, it really is. When we're frustrated because we see political leaders deliberately throwing themselves onto the jagged rocks of a shore from whose bourne no traveler returns, we are reminded that the people who are supposed to be liberals quite frequently prove to be otherwise. And I got up yesterday morning before we went riding off, and I saw this newspaper story from the right-wing rag down in Charleston, the Charleston Daily Mail. Of course, nobody's paying attention to this race, you know, among the liberals, among the progressives, because, well, why would you? Except for the fact that on it, if the nightmare comes true and Joe Manchin wins the special primary on August the 28th here in West Virginia, A, I'm going to drink myself into a stupor, and B, I think some newspaper somewhere should print in big, bold, World War II ends type face. Hillbillies finally screw America back. After years of being screwed by the rest of the nation, hillbillies have finally screwed back, sending Joe Manchin to the November general election to face whatever mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, millionaire right-wing freak who isn't very much different from Joe Manchin in his own right. Blah, 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 election. But that wasn't the headline that I saw yesterday in the Charleston Daily Smail, or Daily Mail. Headline, Manchin raises $530,000 in U.S. Senate bid. Well, okay, big deal. You know, it's all coal money, right, wrong? It's not all coal money at all. He's raised $530,000 in his campaign to roughly $116.32 that Ken Heckler has probably raised. Nah, I kid, but no, the money, he can't even compete. Corporate donors, and that's the thing. I read the headline, then I read the lead sentence and went, what? Corporate donors and Democratic senators have already lined up behind Governor Joe Manchin's U.S. Senate campaign, according to campaign finance records. Blah, 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 blah. Manchin's campaign raised $418,000 in the first 19 days of the race to fill Robert Ray, yada, yada, yada. His likely opponent, if he makes it to general election, Joe Manchin's likely opponent, is a freak named John Racy. Okay? Racy has wanted this Senate seat for years. He's a millionaire. And he's gonna, and he doesn't have any compunction against spending his own money. I've already heard one of his radio ads, heard it yesterday as we were going down the road. John Racy wants to be West Virginia's senator so that we can stand up to Obamacare and tell the federal government that we can take care of our own. Surprised he didn't call him a Muslim. But it's early in the campaign. He'll get around to it. Where's the birth certificate? So anyway, of the money Joe Manchin has received, $172,000 of that was given by given to him by political action committees. The newspaper article makes clear that a PAC can give a candidate in the ongoing West Virginia Senate race $5,000 for the August 28th party primary and another $5,000 for the November 2nd general election. Good work if you can get it, huh? Well, there's more. Sickeningly, there's more. Much more. I'll tell you a lot of it as soon as this slow-ass computer moves to the next page, which it just did. God damn, it's like this is dial-up. But anyway, no, there's more. In Rye Rivard's story, man, get a name change. So these PACs are out there, and they've given lots of money, $172,000. We're not surprised. Let's see. Business and labor PACs backing Joe Manchin include the United Mine Workers of America, $5,000. The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, $10,000. Arch Coal, $2,500. Chesapeake Energy, $2,500. The National Mining Association, $4,000. CSX Railroad, $5,000. Eastman Chemical Company, $1,000. Defense Contractor EADS North America, $2,500. General Electric, $2,500. Natural Gas Company NiSource, $2,500. Patriot Coal, $5,000. Ah, oh, they know. Oh, that's some love. And remember, they can do this twice. JCPenney, $2,000. JCPenney? That's it for pennies. JCPenney, $2,000. UPS, $5,000. US Cellular, $1,000. Verizon, $5,000. and a top, identified as top international law firm Skadden Arps, $5,000. Then there's what the newspaper article calls other more obscure committees. The Action Committee for Rural Electrification. Ow! No, that's not a bunch of guys putting up electric fences. I have a feeling that's some trade industry front group, probably. Who knows? But they gave him $5,000. The Airline Pilots Association gave him $1,500. The American Association of Clinical Urologists. Well, there's a piss poor decision. Oh, how could you resist? Gave him $1,000. The American Chiropractic Association, oh, my ache and back, gave him $1,000. The American Optometric Association, I just can't see it, gave him $5,000. And the American Trucking Associations gave him $1,000. Jay Rockefeller and his wife gave. Former Governor Bob Wise gave till it hurt. Kay Goodwin, the Secretary of the State Department of Education and the Arts, gave. State Coal Association President Bill Rainey gave. Gat Caperton, the son of former Governor Gaston Caperton, who's now a furniture maker, gave. And then it says, as well as area lawyers. I just want to wet my beak. Senior Vice President of International Coal Group, Roger Nicholson, gave. Natural Resources CEO Kevin Crutchfield gave. Andrew, oh, by the way, Roger Nicholson brought you the Sago disaster. International Coal Group did. CEO, Natural Resources CEO Kevin Crutchfield, Andrew Jordan, President of Pritchard Mining, and, quote, numerous top officials at American Electric Power, including company president Robert Powers. It is not clear from the report what money was raised during the event on August the 2nd at Rockefeller's home. Okay. Yeah, so what, Bob? It's just American politics, you know. It's politics bought and paid for. You and I might scrape together a couple of nickels, but, you know, hell, we can't compete with $5,000 from the Action Committee for Rural Electrification, or the Patriot Mining's $5,000, or CSX's $5,000 that carries Patriot Mining's mountaintop removal coal away from Appalachia and probably takes it to, you know, barge stations over at maybe Norfolk, Virginia, or Newport News, where it gets on a barge and goes to China and then comes back to the western United States as a filthy, toxic cloud that makes western children sick. We can't compete with that. Lucky for us, there are some liberal Democrats of long standing in the United States Senate who will at least provide balance to the likes of Democrats in name only like Joe Manchin. Lucky for us. Lucky for us, there is that stalwart liberal, Sherrod Brown of Ohio. He's a good liberal Democrat. And he makes me proud to be a liberal. Only problem is he gave money to Joe Manchin. Lucky for us, there's a good woman named Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota. She's a good liberal. I've seen her at good liberal events in Washington, D.C., and she said good liberal words. And she gave Joe Manchin money. And then there's that World War II hero, that amazing man who called the Reagan administration to task for its filthy dealings in the Iran-Contra affair, Daniel Inouye. Only he gave money to Joe Manchin. But you know what? You think about it, and Hawaii and Minnesota, they're a long way from Appalachia, and they probably barely even know we exist, so that's understandable. Surely to God, nobody who actually lives in the Appalachian Mountains would ever give to Joe Manchin. Well, let's talk about Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, gave money to Joe Manchin to help him defeat Ken Heckler. Yes, indeedy. Amy Klobuchar, Senator Daniel Inouye, Senator Sherrod Brown, Senator Patrick Leahy, Senator Charles Schumer, Senator Tom Udall, Senator Kent Conrad, they all gave money to Joe Manchin to help Joe Manchin beat the real Democrat in the race. They all gave money to Joe Manchin to help Joe Manchin beat the real liberal in the race. They all gave Joe Manchin money so to help Joe Manchin come to the Senate and stick his filthy, coal-tarred finger in their eyes when they try to do something about climate change for you. Makes me sick. With this political donation, I understand that I can never again trust a single word that comes out of Sherrod Brown's mouth, that I can never again trust a word that comes out of Amy Klobuchar's mouth, that I can never again trust a word that comes out of Daniel Inouye's mouth, that I can never trust a word that comes out of Kent Conrad's mouth, that I can never trust a word that comes out of Patrick Leahy's mouth, that I can never trust a word that comes out of Charles Schumer's mouth, that I can never trust a word that comes out of Tom Udall's mouth. No, never. Because they are either painfully, woefully ignorant or liberal and progressive is a badge that they just wear when it suits them. I've heard Amy Klobuchar talk about rights. I've heard Senator Charles Schumer talk about rights. I've heard Senator Daniel Inouye talk about rights. For Christ's sakes, he was interred in a Japanese internment camp before he got to go and get the hell shot out of him in World War II, fighting against the fascists in Italy on behalf of his beloved United States. And they all gave money to a man who is openly at war with the people of his own state. They all gave money to Joe Manchin so that Joe Manchin can go to Washington and make sure that those 3 million pounds of high explosives that go off all over this state every day continue to go off for as long as there is coal left in these hills. They did it. Oh, and by the way, Senator Harry Reid gave Joe Manchin money, too. God Almighty. You know, in a way, I understand all those labor unions that gave money to him. Labor unions understand that you have to pay to play. So it wasn't surprising. I'm not surprised by any of it. I'm not surprised by the National Mining Association any more than I'm surprised by the United Mine Workers of America. But the president of the United Mine Workers of America, Cecil Roberts, owes his very existence to Ken Heckler, owes his very existence, because it was Ken Heckler who began the process of putting in place mine safety and health legislation that stopped some of the killing of United Mine Workers members in death trap hellhole mines. $10,000 from the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. God Almighty, Arch Cole only gave $2,500. This race is completely upside down. And I know what an uphill climb it is, and I think Ken Heckler knows as well. But to have senators who dare call themselves liberal or progressive get behind a corporate creature like Joe Manchin, to get behind a man who will make Blanche Lincoln and Ben Nelson of Nebraska, those notoriously hidebound right-wing Democrats in name only, look like liberals, to do that? Sorry, Sherrod Brown, you just lost all your credibility with me. I mean, Amy Klobuchar, I think Amy Klobuchar, and I'm pretty darn sure Sherrod Brown, have both signed off on the Appalachian Restoration Act that would end mountaintop removal. How do you sign off on that and at the same time give money to Joe Manchin? How do you do that? That means that one position or the other was a fraud. Generally, the wallet speaks the truth of how a person really feels. Do you live in Minnesota? Can you find time to drop a note to Amy Klobuchar and tell her that she has made you sick to the bottom of your gut because you just heard that she gave money to a man who wants to make sure that the planet gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and the oldest mountains on Earth, mountains that happen to be in the United States of America, get flatter and flatter and flatter, and the water gets more toxic and toxic and toxic? Can you do that? Can you drop a note to Kent Conrad and tell him, you know, by God, you know what he did? You got time, if you're in Hawaii, do you have time to send a note to poor old Senator Inouye? My God, I will never forget the day that, you know, we go to these lobbying efforts in D.C. every spring. And we sit in these offices. And we try to talk to them about what's being done to us here in Appalachia. About the 500 mountains that are gone forever, about the 1,200 or maybe 2,000 miles of streams that are buried and gone forever, about the wildlife buried, about the forests denuded, about the floodwaters that come raging off of barren moonscapes to wipe out 100-year-old towns in the valley below. We try to tell them what it's like to watch a sick loved one die from coal poisoning, from the toxins that get into our water and our air. And we did that in Senator Inouye's office. I can't remember her name. We met with a lovely lady. She was earnest. She was sincere. We took a very heavy book with us called Plundering Appalachia, full of amazing color photographs, and we opened it for her, and we showed her what mountaintop removal looks like. We said, you've got rainforests in Hawaii, don't you? Oh, yes. Well, Appalachia, all of Appalachia is a temperate rainforest, and there's not a thing that lives or grows on the entire North American continent that doesn't have Appalachia as its source. Because Appalachia receded the entire continent after the last ice age. We're a rainforest too, ma'am. And we don't like it when they blow it up for coal. Because it makes us sick and it destroys our homes and our communities and is creating a sort of ethnic cleansing as we drive multi-generational families out of their ancestral homes. You wouldn't like that, would you, ma'am? No. And tears came to her eyes, and she began to weep. But apparently those tears fell on nothing. Because Daniel Inouye has money to give to Joe Cole Manchin. And it would make a vulture fly. Charles Schumer. Any New Yorkers out there got time to write a little letter to Charles Schumer? Send him an email maybe? Let him know that you know what he did with his money? I wish there were more of us. Because we could really embarrass these so-called liberal senators. Harry Reid. People in his state don't even want the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Depository. Wonder how he'd like it if 3.5 million pounds of high explosives were used on Yucca Mountain. The same way they use it on us here. Got to be something inside Yucca Mountain worth getting. Some sort of ore, some sort of mineral. Or maybe Mount Charleston outside Las Vegas. Wonder how the hotel and casino business would like to have that crap going on within sight of the Strip. Maybe some folks can write some letters. At least let them know. Blog about it on your regional and in-state blogs. At least let them know. We know where their real loyalties lie. You know none of them would have made those contributions if Jay Rockefeller hadn't said to do it, don't you? Liberals. 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 Like I said, it would make a vulture vomit. Truly. So that's the first hour of the program. And it's Thursday. Thursday's a good thing. That means that the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. I like that. So we'll take a break for that and come back to, hopefully, your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email reaches me very easily. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. You ever been to the chat room? Now would be a great time to try it out. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom, register, easy, easy. There you are. So let's see what you've got on your mind. There's a bunch of other good stories out there, but let's see what you've got on your mind. We'll be back. We're the Horn.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose at money. She gets it on like the Easter Bunny. She's my baby, I'm her honey. I'm never gonna let her go.
He ain't got laid in a month of Sundays. Caught him once and he was sniffing my undies. He ain't too sharp, but he gets things done. Drinks his beer like it's oxygen. But he's my baby, and I'm his honey. Never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spat our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. She thinks all my jokes are corny. Convict movies make her horny. She likes ketchup on her scrambled eggs. Swears like a sailor when she shaves her legs. She takes a lickin' and keeps on tickin'. I'm never gonna let her go.
He ain't got laid in a month of Sundays. Caught him once and he was sniffing my undies. He ain't too sharp, but he gets things done. big brass monkey, swacked out weirdo and a love bug junkie. Sly as a fox, crazy as a loon. Payday comes and he's a howling at the moon. But he's my baby, I don't mean maybe. Never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up a sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. In spite of ourselves, we'll end up a sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes. In spite of ourselves.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, August 19th, 2010.
BP's relief well delayed again.
We have to get it right before we do it.
Authorities scramble to recall tainted eggs. Interior Department enforces the law for a change. Plus, predicting today's extreme weather back in 2007.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Anybody that tells you they know what the temperature is going to be in 100 years, you should put a straight jacket on. They don't have any idea.
Okay, deal. Don Blankenship, CEO of Massey Energy, where 29 miners died last April. We'll put a straitjacket on them so long as we can put handcuffs on you. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored in part by RawStory.com, your source and mine for real, up-to-the-minute investigative news and politics. Oh, and Raw Story is also the first internet news site to offset its own carbon footprint and those of its readers. Get the real story at Raw Story today and every day at rawstory.com. Okay, Des, sensitive work continues in the Gulf, though very few are talking about it right now.
Yes, it has pretty much fallen off the top of the news, but we'll get to that in a moment. First up, a massive new food recall. Over 380 million eggs have been recalled due to potential salmonella contamination after hundreds were sickened by an outbreak across at least three states, with more likely to come. That's 266 confirmed in California alone. The eggs were marketed under 16 different brand names, but the Centers for Disease Control says the potential source appears to be one giant factory farm, Wright County Egg in Iowa.
So this would be another downside of factory farming, wouldn't it? We've got one single producer creating eggs for 16 different companies.
And as we mentioned in the BP oil disaster in the Gulf, out of an abundance of caution, efforts to permanently kill the broken well are on hold while pressure tests ensure that attempts to kill it from the bottom don't cause more problems. Retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, the top federal official overseeing the efforts, told CNN,
"If all that lines up, we should be looking somewhere the week after Labor Day."
An independent study from the University of Georgia disputes the federal government's estimates of how much oil remains in the Gulf. They calculate as much as 80% may still be there.
Just a couple of weeks ago, the government came out and indicated that there was only 26% of the oil left, although if you look closely at the report, really 50% of the oil is left. And now you're saying that independent researchers say as much as
80% could be remaining, but the federal officials dispute that. They say that it depends on how you calculate the flow rate estimates.
I guess this is a story that will continue to play out over months, despite what seems to be a rather noteworthy lack of interest at this point from the mainstream media.
A federal panel has decided that all lawsuits regarding the BP oil disaster will be heard in New Orleans, where the majority of plaintiffs reside, rather than 350 miles away in Houston, as requested by BP.
And will they be able to find a judge who isn't in the pocket of big oil at this point?
The judge that has been assigned to all the cases has sold all of his oil and gas interests.
Okay, well, I feel better now then.
The Interior Department says it will end the practice of granting blanket environmental exemptions to deepwater drilling companies. Basically, the Interior Department is saying that after decades of ignoring laws requiring detailed environmental impact reports, they will begin enforcing the law before granting permits.
So now they're actually going to follow the law and hold these guys accountable, make them come up with a correct plan for their responses.
That details the environmental impact if there should be any kind of spill.
Well, that's a nice change of pace.
The United Nations says it has secured more funding to aid rescue and recovery operations in flood-ravaged Pakistan, where an estimated 4 million people are now left homeless. You can donate $10 instantly via your cell phone by texting the word SWAT, S-W-A-T, to 5055. Now, an important thing to note is that these extreme weather events that we've been seeing in the Northern Hemisphere are also occurring in the Southern Hemisphere. South America is now in the midst of an intense record winter season, seeing record cold temperatures in Argentina, Argentina and Bolivia.
So don't these record cold spells prove that global warming is not happening?
Well, as you know, climate scientists repeat that no one weather event can be tied directly to global warming, but they do predict a trend toward more frequent and intense extreme weather events. And I just want to point out that these specific events that we're seeing were all predicted by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change back in 2007. The very same IPCC report vilified by the climate change denial industry, the Russian heat wave and catastrophic wildfires, the rain and flooding in Pakistan and China, drought in Africa, ice loss in the Arctic, heavy storms in the Northeast United States. These were all specifically predicted by climate scientists in the 2007 report.
All predicted and all ignored and then lied about by folks like CEO of Massey Energy, Don Blankenship, who we mentioned in the opening, who continues to lie about all of the above. For more on that and the stuff we didn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can drop us email, love letters, hate mail, or even PayPal donations to greennews@bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour number two is, in fact, well underway for this Thursday evening edition of The Horn.
A quick email rolling in from Andy, now of Redwood City, California. And he says, Bob, I'm glad you're informing us about the Democrats supporting Mr. Joe Manchin. Particularly, I find Senator Patrick Leahy to be the ultimate weenie. His flouting of the Unitarian Executive Supreme Court Princess Justice Elena Kagan, who fought for Obama to keep habeas corpus rights off the docket for detainees and U.S. citizens, which utterly irritated me. That man, Leahy, who couldn't stand up to F.U. Dick Cheney, completely lost my confidence. I told his staffers weeks ago to get me off Leahy's sick mailing list. Enough with the Princess Kagan propaganda. Bob, it's a club. They suffer from failure by and of omission. It's what they don't do. It's what doesn't get done. It's the perpetual demise of the middle and lower class under this Senate club of elite rats that never feels our pain. They promote other club members out of the corporate class, not out of the progressive class. Look at Obama's track record. Support for Senators Joe Lieberman, Arlen Specter, Blanche Lincoln, Michael Bennett, and on and on and on over the real progressive Democrats. Great diatribe, Bob. Expose these punks. Thanks, Andy. Well, thank you, Andy. Thank you very much. It's almost like as liberals, as progressives, we damn near have next to no one to look up to who represents our values. Have you noticed that Russ Feingold has gone to ground? Never hear much about Russ. Being a freshman, Al Franken doesn't make a lot of noise. That was a nice quip about the Muslim point guards, but not a lot out of Al Franken. Bernie Sanders is about all we have. You'll notice Bernie Sanders was not in the list of senators giving money to Joe Cole Manchin. God, Manchin makes me sick. Eesh. William writes in, so speaking of toxic waste, and no, I'm not referring to the right-wing religious or the so-called media, which would certainly fit the profile as well as the descriptive. Yet look at what these faithful to their wallet corporations have done and have been doing for decades, some under the radar and some written about. I often wonder in my darkest hours, which crop up more now than in past times, I wonder what happens if it is not already unknown to us happened. If these toxins drift and blend and bind together, what we would have then? After all, the earth is all connected in so many ways, whether through water or air currents or imports and exports. Speaking of depleted uranium and spent nuclear bomb waste, as well as spent fuel rods and even the probably unmarked drums of toxic waste dumped into the sea for decades just waiting to erupt. So-called scrubbed coal with the title of clean coal and all of the endless emissions drifting in the air and down to the worn-off rubber from worn-out tires. Really, where does that stuff go? All the lead from leaded gasoline didn't just vanish, just as the BP oil didn't just evaporate. You know, William mentioning clean coal reminds me of something. I have found clean coal. I have found the only clean coal on the planet. And oddly enough, it came in the mail. Yeah. You remember the other night when I played you that little YouTube video of the ladies from Bubble Genius, bubblegenius.com, saying wonderful things about my lovely wife and my daughters, Doodle and Margie? What did they call Agnes? A righteous broad, and that she is. Well, they make magnificent soaps, and they sent along a little soapy care package. There's a little soap in there for me to try with my shaving brush and my, you know, when I go at myself with the straight razor. I am to report back on how that foams up and lathers. But then also in the care package was a little metal bucket of clean coal soap. Little metal bucket. I haven't unwrapped it. Maybe it's plastic. It looks like metal. But it's got all these little black lumps in it, and it's clean coal soap. It is the only clean coal on the planet, and even that is tongue in cheek. If you love this kind of stuff, and I mean, they've got a great spirit of whimsy, and just a really good soul all the way around. Go have a look at bubblegenius.com. Bubble Genius, just like it's spelled .com. They're great. They are just great. Let's see. Three lines remain open if you want to get in on the conversation. Jump right in. We're going to start going through the phone calls as they were received. As soon as I find the right button, someday I get a producer. Hey, welcome to the program.
The other lines dropped off. They shouldn't have dropped off, but I'm first now.
No. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. David begins the Thursday phone calls with gloating.
Oh no. I've called to dial it back up, as they speak. This is going to make you hit your head on your desk, Bob. What I'm about to tell you, it's not going to be on many liberal sites because they don't get it. But headline: President Clinton visits Newsmax.
What?
And I'll tell you how cynical I am. There's a photo with the CEO and Clinton smiling right next to each other. And I'm saying,
tell me it's a Photoshop. Jesus, please,
right.
Please.
But wait.
I mean, because they made photos of him standing talking amiably with the alien, too.
I know, but this is great, the quotes. Former President Clinton took a break from his busy schedule in South Florida Monday to visit Newsmax Media and its founder and CEO, Christopher Ruddy. Even the name, Ruddy.
Jesus, this is the guy who helped create the MENA airport, the Clinton Chronicles, the trail of death and destruction that followed in the wake of the homicidal Clintons.
This is again with the theme of what was brought to Gary about dialing it down. This is what happens when you dial it down and you say Bill Clinton can do anything. You need to stop whining. And then it goes on. It says Clinton toured Newsmax's headquarters in West Palm Beach and had a private meeting with Ruddy. He said, "It's wonderful seeing y'all," was dressed casually with clearly enjoying himself.
It's wonderful seeing y'all.
As he shook hands, walking around the office and chatting with employees. And this is a great quote right here. Later, Clinton was the focal point of a group photo in the Newsmax lobby. "What a great group of people you have here," the president said.
y'all got a great group of people here. Anybody got a Big Mac?
Now a lot of people don't, I mean, for the people who don't understand that, that would be like George Bush visiting Media Matters. Sorry if you're a Clinton supporter, but that's what it would be like.
Well, and that ain't going to happen neither.
Right, and it's not going to happen. Well, we don't know. I'm cynical on this, Bob.
I just wanted to come by and visit you fine folks at Media Matters. You're doing a beautiful job.
you never know.
Ain't gonna happen.
So that's to me, that's a problem. It's a
It's not so much as a problem, David, as it is emblematic of of how he is. You know what I mean? We have this seemingly endless supply, David, of olive branches, which we're willing to extend to the other side, standing there with a band, you know, with the damn Freddy Krueger, the hands and the Jason and the mask and the chainsaw. Oh, look, I got a bloody stump again.
I mean, Newsmax are the same operatives that called his daughter a female dog.
Yes.
I'm sorry, people, but if you're a Bill Clinton supporter, that right there to me is...
You did say West Palm Beach, Florida, right, David?
Yeah, West Palm Beach, yeah.
Is there not... I mean, I hear they got great golf courses there.
That might be.
I mean, they got McDonald's. Is there nowhere else in West Palm Beach, Florida for Bill Clinton to go? The news muck?
I think he suffers from Obama-itis. He thinks he can be friends with everyone and everyone's going to be friends back and treat his family.
No, that's not Obama-itis. That's Sally Fields-osis.
Oh, Sally Fields.
You like me. You really like me.
Ew.
I'm telling you, that really shocked me. But what I called about was I wanted to get your reaction on the Dick Armey interview that I sent you.
Oh, I saw that. Reaction, let's see. We are efforting a response, Dave. Let's use some journalism speak. We are efforting a response.
I really do think you need to go through the whole...
I did. And yeah, what is this? I mean, they're talk about coming out.
I know.
He's basically said we intend to kill Medicare and Social Security.
For those that didn't see it, this is important. This is why I brought it to you, Bob. For those that didn't see it, it was you probably saw the Dick Armey interview on Jon Stewart, but you didn't see the unedited interview, and that's the problem. Crooks and Liars should have put all three parts up. I don't even know if they put up part one. But part one, Bob, was fluff. It was nothing. It was like, hey, how you doing, Dick Armey? Nice hat you got. That's like 3 minutes right there. But then, when you get into the finer details and the line of questioning that he was asking Dick Armey, and specifically when he stopped him and said, wait a minute, you're a former congressman. Why should I believe you?
I know.
that was priceless.
And it goes in before he knows he's cut, you know?
I know. And it reminds me of my dad said to me, he said, he knew a news reporter, and he talked to politicians frequently, and he said, as he was interviewing this politician at the end, he said, why do you do it? Why do you do it? He goes, you know I'm going to rip into you. You know I'm going to ask you tough questions. He goes, it must be excruciating to sit there and listen to these tough questions that you can't absolutely answer. Why do you do it? And he just looked at him and he said, I like to be seen.
I like to be seen. There is no such thing as bad PR.
Not at all, but I just wanted to bring people's attention to the, I'm going to make this a short but sweet call because it's you got some other lines to go to, and that was a great intro. And oh, I did want to say the Anthony Bourdain episode on Rome was pretty impressive.
It was, wasn't it?
I like the bit about the food preparation with the cheese and the prosciutto, and I liked how they talked about how it was alive for the moment when you opened it, but it was dying. As you prepare.
Oh, that big old wheel of Parmesan?
Yeah.
That and the fight scene where that crazy ass argument took place in the restaurant.
Oh, that, yeah.
That was not staged.
Well, you know, I'm used to that because my mom, she's Italian, so we had our grandmother staying with us for some time in the a while back. Many years ago, and that was always it was always great because you wouldn't understand anything they would be saying, arguing Italian. And then I ask her, I go, it's just so classic, so typical. What the hell are you arguing about? You're yelling so loud. And then she would just look at me like, nothing.
But you know, when you compare that with the Dubai episode the previous week, David.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can. He's no good at all at hiding when he's unhappy.
You know, I liked how he
because it was obvious that there was a ton of work went into that Rome episode, and you could tell they loved it all.
Yeah, and I liked how he didn't in the beginning where he didn't give away the restaurant's name because he didn't want people to mob the place.
Right. I'm killing the things I love.
Yeah, and you know what? I thought about that, and I was like, you know, that's part of the problem with TV. We really do kill the things we love in a lot of circumstances like this when we exploit it to levels of that level where it can be seen in reruns over and over and over again, and we make it almost like a fetish, like he said. A food stop fetish.
I went back and listened, and I was okay with the interview. I thought it went okay.
The interview was great. I think that, Bob, if you, I think that should be archived. You put that on the front page for people to get an idea to it, and maybe other people can head on over to the, no pun intended, holy cow, I did some promotion there.
Yes, you did.
You can head on over to the, I'll do it again because I'm an attention whore. You can head on over.
That's three.
That's three. I'm so getting residuals and royalties.
Yes, you are.
And I was going to say.
You know what,
again,
David? I just realized you are the Sheik. If we're looking for Aqua Teen Hunger Force characters, you're our Sheik. I'm so getting residuals.
Yeah, I mean, but if anyone wants to head on, Jesus, I did not mean to do that. But if anyone wants to go over to Anthony Bourdain's message board and post this interview, just head over to the Food Network board and
Travel Channel, not Food Network.
Oh, yeah, Travel. See?
See, you just gave him a little tiny aneurysm somewhere.
I know. But see, that I bet you that happens a lot of times because you're thinking, Food Network.
You know, I'll say this much. There was one thing I didn't ask him. I was trying to have, you know, show some respect and not get him in hot water with the network or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But after everything he said, how must he feel at that show, that man versus food thing? What's his name? Adam Richman or whatever?
Yeah.
I'm going to eat a 10-pound hamburger and vomit all over the bar because I'm an American. You know, that's got to just gall him. I mean, I'm speculating, but it's got to. It's just got to. I mean, if I'm sitting there watching, you know, because it is, it's a little, you know, with the tip of the finger, under the chin, one of those, to the world. Look at us. We're so profligate and wasteful. We'll make television shows about people who deliberately eat too much and throw up.
You know,
how much more Roman can we get? Let's just put the vomitorium outside the McDonald's.
You know what they should do? They should actually have that Kobayashi guy come on, and they should pay him to look really, really mad at Adam Richman because he seemed to be really, really salty about not being able to be in the food eating competition for the year.
Oh, he was hot.
I know, he was hot. But one last thing. I do have a name for Tim Tebow.
Yes?
Tim Clebo from Idiocracy.
Oh, wow.
You know, Cleavon?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There you go.
Very good. David, have a great night, man.
All right, later, Bob.
See ya. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and now you darn well know why he is. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
That was funny from David about the Newsmax. Yeah, damn, come on. I mean, I'm not surprised, but yeah, that is a bit, it's just, cherry on top of, like, the madness.
Is it what I said, Sandra? Is it that we simply don't, I mean, can we simply not conceive of the fact that they hate our guts?
Well, I think, you know, actually, I think it's more in line with the 1% versus the 99%. I'm sort of drifting away from the left-right paradigm. Seriously, I'm looking more at the 1%.
And the rest of us in the 99?
Yeah, and I think the only difference between, you know, the sort of low-information voter and us is just that, low information. Now, granted, you know, I can't excuse the propaganda machine, but see, more and more of us are just in the same situation. So they have to work overtime, hence the moth story, because I just think shit is churning. These people, that what you just started out with about that mansion and all the money coming from these so-called liberals, that's, you know, that says so much, actually.
Yeah, it really, it's the, you know, the curtain yanked back, and there's all the wheels and the knobs and the dials and the dudes yanking them, and, well.
No, it's, you know, it's sort of, and it's hard for me not to go along what you said as far as not listening to another word any of those people say again, because we can't exist by not connecting the dots, you know what I'm saying? It's way past that now. If you don't have a big picture analysis of things, you know,
Sandra, I saw Sherrod Brown's name listed, and you know, I can never see his name listed. I remember when he ran for Senate; he was a member of Congress, and he ran for Senate. And Rush Limbaugh was on the air, and he said, "And you see that name, don't you, Sherrod Brown?
Right.
That's
right.
Because he's a Negro."
Right. No. I remember that. I was dying. Yeah.
Right. And so I'm thinking, you know, this poor guy's getting run over by Limbaugh. There must be something decent about him. And then, you know, and he's done other, you know, I remember when he said, talking about the public option, he said, you know, we're not just going to be checking, we're not going to just vote on health care to be checking a box saying we did health care. And he was making all the right noises at all the right times. It seemed like he, and I've met him, and he seems like a decent guy. But there's a disconnect with this thing with, and I'm stunned. It really is. It's just like a finger right straight through my eye.
Well, yeah. And I mean,
do they not know what kind of governor he's been?
Well, I don't. I mean, the thing is that we can't, you know, you can't afford to assume it's ignorance. That's not an excuse at that level. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's the level that they're operating at is no way in hell that they shouldn't be informed. And they know exactly what's going on. So you have to go back to what you were saying before. That these people, you have to scratch them off the list. I don't know what else to do.
But, you know, like I said, Bernie Sanders isn't there, so.
Which, it says a lot. It's like, well, he ain't there. Somebody, you know what I mean? It's not some case of, accidentally doling out money to whoever's running with a D in front of their name, right?
Yeah, I mean, is there just a standing order in Sherrod Brown's office that says, if Jay Rockefeller writes to us asking for a check, give him what he wants? I don't think so.
Well, it'd be interesting to call the office and, you know, just inquire with one of their aides. I mean, you know, do you have anything to say about that donation to Manchin? You know, just to see if it's even in the consciousness, and I sort of doubt that it is. I think, you know, it's just automatic and, you know, they don't seem to care what this man represents.
And... Because they just want to make sure. Well, look, Sandra, to be fair, and I really do try to be fair, the guy that's if Joe Manchin wins on August the 28th, and I don't think it's as foregone a conclusion as Joe Manchin thinks it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if he wins on the 28th, then he is facing a genuine right-wing nutcase in November.
Well, so what? It's a lesser of two evils, so they got to give it to him? Is that what this
is? Well, isn't that the way general election politics plays out in 2010?
Well, yeah, it is, but the point that I get from you is that when in the world are they ever going to recognize this mountaintop hell for what it is? And, you know, each one of these moves is a setback, you know, as far as I can tell, for that issue. So, I mean, I can appreciate where you're coming from. I mean, why would you take that at face value? You can't accept that. It's unacceptable.
I mean, if I consider the way that Joe Manchin will vote in regard to mountaintop removal, or how that right-wing freak John Racey will vote in regard to mountaintop removal, their positions are identical. Just the same with that sleazy, filthy former Supreme Court justice here in West Virginia, Spike Maynard. His position on mountaintop removal is the same position as Nick Joe Rahal's position on mountaintop removal. Since mountaintop removal is the single greatest threat facing me and my family, what's the difference?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. It's like this issue is not just some sort of one trick pony issue. It's something that permeates every aspect. And so, I mean, I can't, you know, I certainly can't argue with him about those people. And most of those people you listed are complete sleaze. That freak from New York. What's his name?
Schumer.
Yeah, he's horrible. From the horror stories about his support of Israel to his fake, I support the middle class, it's slime. You see what I'm saying? So it doesn't take much to say, yeah, well, why wouldn't he give to Manchin? You know what I'm saying?
Right, but there's somebody like Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah, I don't. That one, I'm sort of like, wow. When you know, I'm sorry. I was sort of thinking
Daniel Inouye.
Yeah, I don't. Dementia?
I think, honest to God, I think Andy nailed it. It's that sort of you scratch my back, I'll scratch mine clubbiness of the Senate, which at this point in time, I'm prepared to say is a failed institution.
Well, it's failed, and it's very illiberal. I mean, it's incredibly undemocratic. I can't even believe how it's operating and the damage that it's doing to, you know, our feeble democracy. It's incredible. But anyway, you know, all these senators are sort of an island of nightmare. You know what I mean? Each one, they potentially can cause so much damage, and they do. I'm so sick of the institution, I got to tell you.
You know what I find funny, though, is that there's no money from Blanche Lincoln or Ben Nelson, especially Ben Nelson. He doesn't even have a contest in front of him. And he can't cough up some love for, well, you know, I think it's probably jealousy because Joe Manchin has much better hair than Ben Nelson.
And it's sorry to say, but I'm sure those people operate in that pettiness too. It's not really a joke. But listen, I have to, I don't know. I don't know if you heard what's the Malloy's show today, but I read that story about the Mott strike.
Yeah.
That is just, I mean, to me, that, when you said you were talking about that mosque, I'm like, oh, thank God. Because, yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm like, hello, I'm done. But that Mott story, that is, the implications and the ramifications of that is mind-numbing.
You know, Rick Smith, my colleague from the weekends, is he knows a bunch about that Mott strike. And he said it's the damnedest thing he's ever seen. He said, usually when a strike takes place, other competitors will use the strike as a means of ramping up their own business.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of the Mott strike, no, not so much. Mott has the other producers of similar products are out there picking up Mott's slack for Mott.
Right. No. It's just sort of. The situation that American workers find themselves in now is so dismal. It's stunning. To the point where we have to listen to a profitable corporation say, look, idiots, we're just going to cut your wages. Too bad you're nothing. Go away.
And they can.
And they can, and there's nothing to stop it. So, you know, they get success with this, and it's a domino. Anyway, I'm just sort of, that whole situation is really doing my head in, and it's just incredible. It's an incredible story that's probably going to start playing itself out all over the place, you know?
Yeah, it's a canary in the coal mine for other American workers, because so far the one thing that they haven't been able to fully offshore because of the liabilities involved. You know, it really sucks when the poison gets into your the old red dog food or whatever is food production.
And
to that extent, you know, we've still got a few canneries left, and we've still got some industrial places that make Slim Jims. You know, they blow up every now and then, if you recall. And you know, we've got Smithfield Meats in Tar Heel, North Carolina, with undocumented immigrants, 9 months pregnant, wielding razor-sharp knives at a production line of dead hogs that flies past at like 30 miles an hour or something. We've still got those. And to that extent, what you're seeing with the Mott case being a harbinger of it is that, yeah, we've got an economic opportunity, the corporations think, to finally destroy labor once and for all. And they are, by God, going to do it.
Well, no, and it's just incredible because there is nothing stopping them, and a problem with that besides the sort of misery that it will cause is, you know, I don't know if it's Galbraith, I think the original one, not the son, the father, came up with a contravailing power. You see, the whole idea of that, you need to have that in our system, and labor has always been that power. Well, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be completely alarmist, but, you know, I make jokes about neo-feudalism, but I'm beginning to think that...
I don't think it's a joke anymore.
It's a real, you know, possibility that, you know, like Malloy was saying, well, now they'll tell these workers, we'll give you $10, how about $8? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of future tense. I think it's already happening.
Yeah, and it's just kind of, you know, to tie that back in with these sort of liberals, what in the world? The only way this is going to be stymied at all is check, card check. You know, a repeal of Taft-Hartley? Is that what the...
Well, no, it's just passage of the Employee Free Choice Act, EFCA.
Right, but I mean, it was... Taft, was it Taft-Hartley?
Yeah, it's Taft-Hartley is just a hateful, onerous
right.
piece of crap.
Well, the card check would, you know, go a long way into, you know, mitigating that nightmare. And see, I don't see no movement, nothing, not even a chat about card check. Have you?
Oh, no. No, no. Not since Harry Reid promised it to us on January the 21st, 2009.
No, but...
By summer, he said. We'll have card check by summer.
No, they're too busy talking about this moss. You know what I mean? All of it is just a bunch of BS.
Well, I'm not trying to talk down or anything, but you understand, do you not, why I see this as this not a mosque, not a story, as being a self-inflicted wound. When I saw Howard Dean opining on it, I thought, you know, Jesus, Howard.
Oh, no, it was too much. That was a straw for me. I'm like, what in the world, you know? It was just, really, you know? And meanwhile, unemployment insurance claims hit 5,000 last week, the highest this year in 2010.
5,000?
Yeah, 500,000.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
And, you know, ideally, things are going better when it's under 400,000. And when we were shedding, you know, 700,000 a month there for a second, it was at 600,000. So, you know, this could be that double dip. You see what I'm saying? That's
yes.
Not a good number.
No, that's a ride on the roller coaster.
Right. And the other interesting thing that popped up in my that I checked out today was, oh, the labor and production pressures and wages in China is going to cut into the West's profits. So, you know, they don't know if they'll
China's going to want to the Chinese are going to want to be paid more. Is that what it means?
No. They're already making noises about they're going to be starting looking to move to cheaper.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The Chinese want more money, so they're going to pack up and find some. And, you know, that's the nice thing with all, you know, with the global village. Eventually it'll come back to us, and we'll work for pennies on the dollar, and won't we be happy and free?
Well, no, but I like when they say the profits for the West. It's like, no, you know, they need to, you know, let's start changing the language to what it is. The profit for the global oligarchy, because it's not the West. These companies are trading with themselves.
Absolutely.
They're not trading with China.
Yeah, it's the profits for the transnationals.
Oh, anyway, so it's just kind of, so when I have to listen to Howard Dean and all these, I'm like, you know what? You people need to be working on this job situation nonstop.
Yeah, what happened? You remember the campaign, the 1992 presidential campaign? You remember It's the Economy, Stupid?
It's just interesting to see that. You know, I keep thinking to myself, oh, whatever, they got to come up with something. But they really are going to try to go through this election season without dealing with 10% and more unemployment, you know? It's so corrosive, unemployment.
And the thing, Sandra, I don't know. Well, I suspect they do. I've now gotten two emails from the Obama organization asking me to commit to voting Democrat in November. One from Barack Obama, and then a follow-up from David Plouffe, like they knew that I didn't click the link. And I ain't clicking the link. I just got an email in from Ron in Raleigh, and he said, frankly, I'm getting tired of this voting for the lesser of two evils BS. From now on, I'm voting for the biggest bomb-throwing Trotskyite liberal I can find and let the chips fall where they may. And he kind of takes me to this place, Sandra, where maybe it's time for liberals and progressives to explain patiently to our dim-witted elected representatives, here's how it goes. We're voting in the primaries. That's our voting. It don't happen in the primaries. We don't get liberals. We don't get progressives. We walk away. You lose.
I mean, you know, it's just sort of, it's just stunning, the attitude, and, I mean, I don't understand where the whole, you know, like you said, why did they weigh into that story at all?
It wasn't called for.
And
that's the thing, you know, it's not, and I'm not barking at you, it's not a story. You know, they don't have the money to build it. This thing was created, it is a creature, it's a little Frankenstein's monster of the right. It is, if you will pardon the analogy, and I don't use this in any racist terminology, it is a tar baby.
Yet again, I mean, they're just coming rapid fire. So you're saying that this is a project that's just on the drawing board.
Yeah, I mean, the Politico Today headline, Mosque a Long Shot to Be Built. Let's see, the efforts to launch the $100 million Cordoba House, now dubbed Park 51, two blocks north of the World Trade Center site have been an uphill battle from the start, and not just because of controversy. The Cordoba Initiative hasn't yet begun fundraising. Get this. They have not yet begun fundraising for the $100 million goal. Their latest fundraising report with the New York State Attorney General's office from 2008 shows that they have exactly, get this, and see, I read this earlier, Sandra, and lights, bells, whistles, you know, yeah. The works. They have $18,000.
No, I mean, you know what? It's stunning. This information is absolutely stunning. I mean, I, you know, it's just, wow. I don't even know what to say about it. It's incredible. I'll let you go because I'm sure you have other people. But the only other thing I wanted to mention was, do you realize that Pakistan is rapidly becoming a failed state with a nuclear weapon?
Yes.
I mean, that flooding, that's unimaginable suffering, and millions upon millions upon millions of people are so screwed. Where is the international community?
Yeah, what is it? The Indus River now stretches, let's see, here. Trying to think. What's 20 miles from here? It stretches two-thirds of the way from the width of the Indus River is two-thirds of the width of the trip from here to Beckley. You know, pick anything that's 20 miles from you, Sandra. The Indus River is that wide.
Oh, my. I mean, no, it's... listen, this is incredible, and there's a war going on in that area on top of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And they supposedly have these nuclear weapons under lock and key. Yeah.
Well, under lock and key and a few hundred billion gallons of water at this point, for all
no,
we know.
No, but that's what I'm saying. And the thing is that all we hear about is this goddamn story about the mosque. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, oh, Brett Favre. That fool is supposedly back, but did you hear the rumor how he don't like the coach?
No.
Yeah, so apparently, you know, how they let their peoples come out with these sources.
Right, yeah, my guy had lunch with your guy. And yeah,
yeah, he was hesitating because he don't think that, what's his name, Childress or Brad?
Brad Childress.
Yeah, he don't know what he's doing. So that was the latest drama. But then I just saw at ESPN that he's back.
Yeah. This is, you know, the urge, you know, he's got to stay in the limelight so he can take more pictures of his Johnson and send it to somebody. Maybe
see, that's what it's been reduced to, and it's hilarious. It's like, you're kidding me, right? You're sending your dick through the, you know, I don't even know what to say about that either, but anyway, so that fool is back. You know, they're going to be some major hating on him, I think.
Oh, a lot. I saw an ad this weekend that showed some obvious, it was a dish, DirecTV or something ad, and it was a woman who was obviously in Wisconsin, and she was a big Green Bay fan, and she was, like, doing counseling with her priest or whatever, and she said, you know, these 49er fans just moved in down the street. But I was nice, and I took him a cheese tray, and it shows her going up to the door and leaving the cheese tray on the floor on the porch by the door, and running and hiding in the bushes after ringing the bell, and the cheese tray said, you know, die you dirt bag.
Oh man, that's wow. Well, when's the opening season? See, I haven't even been.
Isn't it Labor Day or thereabouts, or the Sunday after Labor Day?
Oh, okay. Because I know they've had the. I don't know how many exhibition games they have. It seems to be so many of them.
Five or six, aren't there?
Oh my God! But yeah, so because you know I live in California, so it's the 49ers all the time, right? You know I hate the 49ers. What can I say? I've never been a fan. You know, it's just all we hear about is, oh, how good they're going to be. I think they're going to suck, but
they'll stumble. There'll be one team that comes out of nowhere. I've already had an email saying that the Ravens may be engaging in the usual wishful thinking.
There's always always, you know, it's like, I'm sorry. What's his face is getting long in the tooth. He can't go too much longer.
Ray Ray?
Yeah, Ray Ray, yeah. That fool. I mean, he's good, but come on. He must be 36 by now, right? Or 35 or something.
Yeah, and them, you know, them trials will put years on you.
Well, getting away with killing folks, that must weigh on your mind.
Yeah, it's all picture of Dorian Gray stuff, Sandra.
Oh, man. Listen, but the Vikings, though, to me, this is a problem with the NFL. It's a really, it's so brutal. This poor kid who keeps collapsing with the headaches.
Yeah.
Percy Harvin? Yeah. Why don't they let that kid go and get some attention, some medical care?
Well, and wasn't it the Vikings that had the guy drop dead of heat prostration a few years ago?
That's right. And it's just kind of like, you know what? This kid keeps, you know, having major headaches. It's like something is going on. It's not just some etcetera.
Well, I know. I saw that story, Sandra, and it occurred to me to wonder, was all of that stuff that the NFL put out about being serious about head injuries, was that just window dressing?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, hello, you're a huge institution, access to endless medical this, that, or another. Why didn't you spend the off season dealing with this kid's head problems, you know?
And in the end, even though they're paid millions of dollars, Sandra, it's because they're the workers. And management really doesn't give a good damn because there's another one right behind him who wants the job.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I don't know. I wish I could remember the name of that book. There was this really amazing book written by a former NFL player. In the book title, I had something about slavery, but it was all about what really goes on with the no-name players of that league. It's outrageous.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But anyway, you know, we digress. So, yeah.
And meanwhile, nobody's talking about the Saints at all. Well, you know, they won the Super Bowl. But,
listen, you think they're going to repeat? Who repeats in the NFL?
No, they won't. They may fall flat on their face for the first, you know, 9 games.
Don't they got some sort of legal problems with taking prescriptions?
Yeah, there is that.
Right, you know. I mean, I know more about the goss because, you know, I'm a chick, so that's what I look for. That story is hilarious, too. Anyway, Bob, listen, I'll let you go. So.
All right, have a good night, Sandra.
Yeah, you too.
Bye now. Bye. Sandra calling from Sacramento, and onward we roll. Nope. Okay. Well, that takes us to the top of the hour, 8 p.m. Here on the East Coast, so we'll just sort of give it a nice little break. Lines are wide open. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And barring that, you know, there's some... God, there's some stupid stuff out there. I did 15 solid minutes about not wanting to talk about the Not a Mosque, Not a Story. And everywhere I go, it's like, I don't know, bed bugs. By the way, did you know America has a bed bug problem? Yeah, we do. They're all over the place. You know, Marty writes in and says, the first rule about Politico, don't believe anything written in Politico. I understand that, but this is Politico reporting that they don't have any money to build not a mosque. For all its problems, the project does have a solid chance of accomplishing one thing, further embarrassing the president. Quit shooting yourself in the foot. It's not that, complicated. So we'll take a little break. You chime in if you want to. I'm going to find some non-mosque stories. I've got them, in fact. And by God, we'll go over them. But, you know, I can't get away from thinking about this business with, you know, Amy Klobuchar, Harry Reid, Daniel Inouye. Somehow it preys upon my mind. And it feels like, It does. It feels like betrayal. It's just another reminder that what happens here in Appalachia doesn't matter a good old-fashioned damn to our betters. You know? Maybe I'm wrong. You're certainly welcome to try to convince me that I am. But it really makes you feel like, you know, just being done with a lot of them. At any rate, you know the phone number. You know the email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And, you know, we'll be back, and we've got another hour of conversation radio ahead of us. This is, yes, indeed, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn.
We used to have good times together, but now I feel them slip away. It makes me cry to see love die. So sad to watch good love go bad.
Remember how we used to feel, dear. You said nothing could change your mind.
It breaks my heart to see us part. So sad to watch good love go bad. Is it any wonder that I feel so blue
when I know for certain that I'm losing?
Remember how we used to feel, dear. You said nothing could change your mind. It breaks my heart to see us part. So sad to watch good love go bad. So sad to watch good love go bad.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5.5 minutes past the hour. William writes in and says, when we talk about food, I always recall a week or two in 1966 when one of the many times I worked with my father, the carpenter who built custom homes and was his sole partner from the age of seven. In 1966, he, as always, had to take jobs between homes to hold us over. We were in Chicago replacing the flooring in a slaughterhouse in this place of horror, as many had railroad tracks running between the factories that bordered both sides of the track. I needed some air, so I stood in the open doorway, and right across the track was a factory that produced these sausage products my father loved. I went over to him as I watched how they did this mass production. They attached to the end of a metal blue tube intestines while two men tossed heaps of meat in a grinder off the bare wood floor, cigarette butts and all. As the swill was reduced to fit through the tube, a lever was pulled, forced through this tube, and one fellow tied it at the end of his intestine to make segments. Needless to say, my stubborn father gave up eating this crap. Well, you know, that's an object lesson of the actual meaning of, you know, there are two things in life you don't want to see made. Laws and sausages. True in both cases. Thanks, William. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
How you doing, man?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, you know, the mosque madness is kind of sad to watch, and
I'm past sad. I'm more infuriated.
Yeah.
Because exactly. it, our side keeps grappling with it, and it keeps sticking to them, while the other side's busy making up new crap to tar us with.
Yep. And they've been building this stuff for years. The Islamophobia. You know, we've spoken about this before, how it is in programs like 24, how it appears in movies like True Lies, that one with Schwarzenegger and Lee Curtis. You know, and they can put this stuff, these brief images, in what may be a good film otherwise. I don't like it at all, but, you know, it has its titillating features or whatever. And, and so these images get dropped in people's subconscious. They're working the subconscious in so many ways. It's really appalling. One of the founders of the public relations industry was a guy named Edward Bernays, and he was a second nephew or something of Sigmund Freud's. And, you know, thought a lot about the subconscious mind, kind of our emotional, you know, how we can get led around by our emotions at times. We're not mindful, and boy, the way they poke at people's minds with this stuff is really irritating. And
it has consequences. I mean, I think I'm comfortable saying, you know, look, you will see those already shocking Obama is a Muslim numbers go dramatically higher once the polling data is taken that takes into account his August 13th, 2010. Defense of something that can't even be built yet.
You know, Limbaugh was talking about that all day today. He kept saying over and over, more and more people think Obama is a Muslim. More and more people think Obama is a Muslim. And then he's like...
Yeah, because there's an unstated conclusion there that Obama is a Muslim.
There's that, and it's him leading people's thoughts.
Yes.
Hey, everybody. You're all thinking Obama is a Muslim.
We're all thinking Obama is a Muslim.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, as large as these narratives get, you know, as, you know, the 50,000-watt stations and all that stuff, I think they're really smaller than they appear. And, you know, there is a Wizard of Oz dynamic. You know, they can manipulate the big screen, but you pull back the curtain and there's just these little frightened people. And I think there is a lot of that curtain pulling going on here and there. I mean, let me give you an example. I went to Omaha a couple weeks ago, and people think of that town as, you know, red state Republican America, damn it.
Right.
And it's a lot more multicultural and even subversive in a way than that. When I was there, I found yoga studios. And, you know, that's not explicitly political, but it is something from another country.
Well, you know, I just can't imagine Ted Nugent doing yoga.
There, exactly. That's what I mean. And, in fact, a school tried to bring it into their phys ed curriculum here, and the right-wing Christians went nuts. This was in Aspen, I think, a couple of years ago, and they're like, that's a foreign religion, and it's this, that, the other thing. They were very threatened by it, and I don't know if they were successful in blocking it, but there are those efforts going on.
Did you see this story about Sharon Angle, Preston?
I've seen a few.
Well, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, which one?
Yeah.
This thing just kind of blew me away. It turns out, because, you know, not many people know what a loon she truly is, because we can't make that thing. And if, to the extent that people are... Okay, I'm going to try to gather my thoughts, Preston. the reason the right wing can make all this stuff stick and we can't is because their megaphone is bigger and louder and stays pegged at 11. Okay?
Yep. Yep.
Now, meanwhile, it turns out there is a story out there about none other than Sharon Angle. And here's the fun part. Her first foray into activism or advocacy or whatever you wish to call it was, as it turns out, I mean, this just it bent my brain. She engaged in a campaign to stop a local high school in Nevada from wearing a black jersey.
Oh, yeah.
A high school football team called the Muckers, really, had an abysmal season the year before. So the next year, the football coach said, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to get my kids this year fired up for their 1992 homecoming game against Laughlin High School by telling them that, you know, the darkest days are over and we're going to purge this by wearing black jerseys to remember the previous year's, you know, gut stomping. And Sharon Angle and a bunch of other the right-wing religious freaks began a full-on assault against this idea, with Sharon Angle saying that black is the color of evil.
Mm. Okay.
I don't know if she thought they were going to be wearing, you know, little pointy witch's hats instead of football helmets. But here's the thing. They made them pull the black jerseys. They raised so much of a stink that this team was not allowed to wear the black jerseys. And what's more, the kids who had pulled out of their own pockets to buy them never got their money back.
They should come out in pink next season. I bet that would go over big.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, but that was 1992. And so that's how long she has been an evangelical right-wing fundamentalist weirdo.
Yeah. So, you know, our emotions. You know, again, how are emotions being played? And they're diverting people with this sort of these goose chases all over the place. You know, pitting people against people who should be our allies, whether it's immigrant labor or, you know, whoever, you know, people in other countries. Instead of being angry over things we should be angry about, I mean, the pharmaceutical industry, they're causing so much havoc and death and illness. It's really amazing. The Vioxx case, I think that was causing heart attacks for a lot of people. Avandia now, Paxil, there's a suit going on right now.
I saw that there's a lawsuit out against Polident.
Maybe.
Because it turns out that glop that people glue their dentures in with apparently is toxic to your innards.
Probably, yeah. That would be par for the course. Yeah, we're being poisoned, essentially. But again, there's a real movement going on towards, you know, not just organic foods, but more, you know, less toxic products in so many ways. There are whole stores opening that focus on toys that don't have lead in them and things like that. Some of the toys moving away from some of the plastics. You know, kids are constantly chewing on these plastic toys, babies are. And, you know, they think it's a cause of all this, you know, ADD, autism, a variety of problems.
But just as with high fructose corn syrup, there's probably some industry PR flack, the lobby group out there working on a campaign that says that it's okay to chew for babies to chew on poisonous Chinese toys in moderation.
No doubt. Have you ever heard of a person named Shannon Hayes? She wrote a book called The Radical Homemaker. And she's educating a lot of moms about, again, what is the definition of motherhood or fatherhood? You know, Dr. Laura tried to define that in some odd ways. And but, you know, even Dr. Laura is more complex than she can be portrayed by us. For example, she's very much against advertising to young children, and she used to talk about how Sweden was doing the right thing when they kind of banned that mix of like the cartoons and the product placement going on Sunday, Saturday morning cartoons.
That are now so, 24 hours a day, 7 day a week cartoons.
It is, you know, in the shows like Hannah Montana, you know, it's more product pushing from the Disney Corporation, and that's a repulsive show. I'm sorry, but, you know, it has all that fake piped in laughter.
Oh, have you seen The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody?
Another horrible one. Yep, I have. Actually,
you know, with the funny subservient black man and the witty wealthy Asian girl.
Yeah, and it's the constant life of they're just shopping and a lot of ridiculing each other.
Yeah, consuming, and then talking about the having crushes on girls and. Really, is this, Preston, tell me, is this the sum and substance of adolescent existence now, or is that simply the model being presented?
That's the model being presented by, you know, various authoritarian and some business interests. For instance, you know, the Hannah Montana characters, they'll often make fun of other people's clothing. Well, then, guess what? They've got a whole line of Hannah Montana clothes to sell, so you can be cool. And it's all there at Target, you know. And a lot of it's very kind of hypersexualized. And again, real things I think maybe we should be getting angry about. You know, our kids being manipulated.
Well, you know, you could make an argument, Preston, that I see a lot of this marketing, especially to the extent and that it's driven toward women, as abusive of women. Because, talk about a totally dichotomous situation. You've got older women and the concept that's been rubbed into the culture of the cougar, right?
Yeah.
And so you've got older women dressing younger and young girls dressing older.
Mm.
So that and in both instances, it is entirely sexualized. Now, I'm afraid that I'm going to start sounding like a grumpy old man or something. I don't care what people wear. You know, frankly, I don't even care if women wear, beekeeper suits. As long as it's what they choose to wear, not what somebody chooses for them to wear. And in the cases of repressive South Asian cultures where there are burqas, that's the problem. It's not choice. It's being forced upon them. And the same thing applies, and I think this is important, the same thing applies to our corporate culture, Preston. That is...
Imposition of markets.
Via market manipulation, imposition of thou shalt wear that is no less pernicious than some fundamentalist, holding his belt out. Put on the burqa!
Yep, and thou shalt eat. You know, they're imposing markets around that. You know, they talk about free markets all the time. So, you know, we should know right away that must be one of their major deceptions if they're always pushing this, you know, like free market this, free market that. You know, they're imposing stuff on people globally. You know, it's going on, you know, in Iraq. You know, they're, you know, part of the invasion is about seizing resources, not just oil, but also water. Iraq has these huge water aquifers and stuff. But it's also imposing markets. And, you know, one of the imposed figures of the head of the Department of Agriculture for Iraq was former executive for, I think, Cargill. So it's going to be about, you know, and Iraq had all these protections for their indigenous, you know, for their own agriculture system, their own system of irrigation. You know, they didn't want to use Monsanto's GMO. So you overthrow the government, and they're going to be using Monsanto's GMO wheat. Again, imposed markets, but again, the resistance, and regarding some of the girl culture stuff, there's a magazine called New Moon, newmoon.com. And if you have young women in your life, I really couldn't recommend this more. And it's written and edited and illustrated by young women.
Oh, wow.
A lot of them are very in tune to, they've been taught media criticism. They may watch some Hannah Montana, but they're thinking critically about it. You know, it's like teaching our kids to look both ways. And, you know, they have poetry. They have an interview, believe it or not, an interview with Eve Ensler.
Oh, wow.
You know, and they quote her. We're taught that the worst thing you can be is a girl, that to be a leader, you should never be a girl. So it must be pretty powerful to be a girl if everyone's taught not to be one, right? And she goes on about that. And there's a girl who wrote in this letter. You'll like this. This is from Natalie, 12, in Illinois. In Hannah, Montana, Miley worries about boys all the time. Miley has been doing some really bad things in real life, too. I used to love watching Hannah Montana, but I realized that's setting a horrible example for girls. London Tipton from The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody cares only about fashion. You can tell they're trying to make her look dumb. And they're also making it look okay, like it's okay to laugh at that. So, you know, there's a lot of growing consciousness. And back to Omaha, there's this yoga studio. There's this vegetarian restaurant that had, you know, that has progressive documentary films every month or so. My nephew, while I was there, was going out to a concert in Fremont, Nebraska, an equality concert in solidarity with immigrants. You know, you may remember that Fremont passed a really draconian anti-immigrant bill. And so there was this big concert being organized to resist it. And again, this is Omaha. And I saw a lot of things like that. I came across this this place called the Om Healing Arts Center. And it's right in kind of the old market, very tourist friendly, and just a kind of a fun spot of town with a lot of bars and restaurants and music. And now there's this amazing healing arts center, and they just brought in some monks from Tibet, I think, or Nepal, maybe, and just interesting stuff. So,
well, you know what you're saying has real resonance with me, Preston, because it sort of, for me, points in the direction of where maybe my own head is taking me.
Okay.
And that is that maybe my frustration with these politicians, maybe it comes from, maybe it's a point of realization on my part. Maybe the real liberalism will never ever happen at the political level. Maybe it only happens at places like you just described.
That's where I'm seeing most of it. That's for sure. Kind of just, you know, cultural things, food networks, grassroots organizations, some independent media efforts of all sorts. You know, Tom Hartman always says something like, you know, if people start a movement, eventually some leaders will catch up to it at some point. I think that's going to be a fair amount of the change that we see. And I'm seeing a lot of it, that's for sure. I mean, there's certainly the other narratives of the gloom and doom. That's there. I'm not denying that. You know, that's coming over us like a tsunami. You know, more coal plants are being built. We're cranking up the uranium mining here in Colorado. I just recently saw that documentary, Gasland. Very depressing. I mean, just this rape of the earth going on. And all this toxic crap they're pouring into our water supply are already dwindling, limited water supply is being poisoned by these lunatics. Al-Qaeda isn't very kind compared to these freaks and the cancers they're causing. You know,
yeah.
Not just here, but here and abroad with the depleted uranium. You know, they're
sure
poisoning the earth.
And, you know, and then the question is, you know, we keep talking about tipping points in terms of global warming, global climate change, the climate catastrophe. But it's not just that. You know, it's the food crisis. It's the water crisis. And probably the if you listed it by priority, I mean, come on, you can, as has been proven by various and sundry yogis and people on hunger fasts and so forth, you can go a while without food.
Mm-hmm.
You're screwed without water. I mean, in almost no time flat, your body turns on itself.
Yeah,
and the next thing you know, your kidneys are failing, and you're hallucinating your brains out, and then you're dead.
Yep.
And so, if you want to prioritize, let's start with the water, and you know the hydrofracking that's involved in reaching the Marcellus Shale, for instance, here on the eastern side of the Mississippi River.
Yep.
And that formation runs literally the length of the Appalachians itself. And so let's assume that we end mountaintop removal. Well, we've got another battle on our hands with that toxic crap.
Yep.
And the thing is that people don't, it's everybody's water. Everybody's. You know, once they've befouled all the water that's available to them via freshwater sources, what's next? Desalinization plants on the coasts so they can pump water so that we can get the natural gas that they then use to heat the boilers that melts the tar sands in Alberta that brings up the crude?
Yeah.
I mean, at what point in time do we finally realize, Preston, that we're talking about a chain link causation, if you will, and that we're bringing in mongooses to deal with the snakes that we brought in to deal with the rats, and then we got to do something about the mongooses, and then we got to do something about the something that did something about the mongooses, and out into infinity, instead of cleaning up the mess so the rats won't have anything to eat.
Yep.
That probably made no sense whatsoever.
No, I hear you. And back to what the yogis are saying about the importance of water. You know, and that reminds me of one of the great crimes of, kind of modern history, war crime, which was the U.S. and England's regular bombing of Iraq's sewage system and their...
Yeah, and last I checked, according to the established law of nations, bombing civilian infrastructure is a war crime, isn't it?
That's right. And two U.N. human rights, directors of their assistance program resigned in protest. The UN estimates were something like 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five and under, died as a result of that.
I remember when Margaret Albright said she could live with that number.
That's right.
She eventually recanted, but I remember when she said it.
That's right. And, you know, and people like Hannity and stuff, the way they can focus people's minds away from this stuff, it's, or all of us, you know, they get liberals too to, you know, we forget these things. It's like,
and the next thing you know, Amy Klobuchar is giving money to Joe Manchin.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? It is. It's pervasive.
Yeah. So, but again, you know, what's the response in the grassroots? Where's the humanity? Not seeing it around D.C. and Pentagon, it's like, you know.
I know.
Just the symbolism.
Well, and getting so-called liberals and progressives to pay attention to things that matter. You know, I've been beating on this issue of this special primary on August the 28th, Preston, and I've been trying to do my part. I have sent out emails to Tom Hartman, to David Sirota, to Ed Schultz, to Mike Malloy. I've sent out emails about the importance of this campaign to the liberal talkers that have really good progressive credentials and some that have less than good progressive credentials, in the hopes of getting a little bit of attention focused over here. Of all of them I wrote to, I got one response. At all, one response. Of all of them that I wrote to, I got one, yes, this is important, and we'll do it. Care to guess who?
Good question.
Malloy.
I don't know.
Malloy.
Okay.
Because Malloy walks the walk, and Malloy talks the talk. And Malloy is real.
Yeah. Well, it's disappointing on that, but in defense of the others,
I mean, in the space between now and August the 28th, Preston, none of these people has time to give a 15-minute segment to a political race that runs the risk of squirreling every progressive thought in this country? Is it just because we're stupid hillbillies? Or is it just because they're not paying attention? Or is it just because that they've been told that Ken Heckler's campaign isn't real enough? That it's a joke?
You know, a whole combination of stuff, I would imagine. And probably a lot of overwhelmment, maybe, I imagine. Maybe at least in dropping the seed, they might get back to it at some point. But Sirota's actually been doing something else, though, interesting this week. And, you know, another thing about the right-wing noise machine is the job security it provides. I mean, there are just so many openings and so much help and support and financial backing you'll get for, you know, being with that script. But, you know, the progressive people, not so much. And also they get just this wave of the flack from the Hannitized ditto head types. Just badgering emails and badgering phone calls and, you know, focus on the family at times. They can rally their email supporters and get them going.
Oh, yeah, and you dare not watch a Denver Broncos game this season because Focus on the Family has bought them some little Timmy Tebow ads.
Okay, oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's all that. And, you know, a lot of, you know, if there aren't the opportunities, it's hard to find the support to, you know, carry on with it at times. But Sirota's spoken to this. Just today he was talking about how kind of burnout he was feeling and just a lot of things that were going on for him. But more recently he got kind of energized to do this low impact week, and he had been kind of inspired by that Colin Beavan, who wrote a book called No Impact Man, and there's a documentary of the same name. Fantastic book. And so, you know, just a great analysis of consumer society and stuff like that, and just being more mindful of, you know, where our energy is coming from and where our plastic's going to be going and that kind of thing, and some options, you know, offering some options. And Sirota's been doing this all week, and he himself, he's got a new house, and he's expecting a child pretty soon, and they're getting settled in, and he brought in the sponsor who does solar power. He's been promoting farmers markets. He's been promoting a Nepalese restaurant that has a lot of, you know, lower meat meals to offer. Ecopolitan is one of the stores that sells children's stuff, you know, clothing and whatnot that's been vetted for its safety, for its non-toxicity. So it's been cool to see. For commercial talk radio, it's again, the stuff that I enjoy watching, you know, however much time we've got on this beautiful earth.
Well, I remember what Kurt Vonnegut said, Preston. When it comes, at the end of the day, I've come to the conclusion that we were all just basically put here to dance.
There you go. Beautiful. Exactly. Exactly.
And the problem is we are beset by people who are hell-bent on lopping our feet off at the knees.
Yeah, we've got like this death wish thing going on.
You know, you mentioned the Hannah Montana clothing a little bit ago. The fact of the matter is, do little children working in third world sweatshops get to wear Hannah Montana clothing? I'm betting not. You know, I'm betting that the slave labor or near slave labor that makes Hannah Montana clothing probably couldn't afford Hannah Montana clothing with a month's wages.
Yeah, but, you know, it's actually kind of sad, though, that a lot of the kids in other countries, I mean, you could travel the world, and they're all wearing Hannah Montana and, you know, Michael Jordan jerseys and, you know,
and Tim Tebow jerseys.
Yep, and so often we'll say, oh, they like us so much. You know, we're so popular. And it's kind of self-aggrandizing thing that goes on. But another perspective on what's going on there is, again, imposition of markets, destruction of cultures, definition, you know, how tastes are being defined by CEOs and, you know.
You know, I love, there's a line, in fact, I quoted it in an email earlier today. There's a line from William Shakespeare's Henry V where he says, let us be not followers of fashion, but makers of it.
Yeah, I like that.
Or something similar to that effect. And you know what? If we could do that, we would go a long way toward actually fixing more ills than perhaps we even conceive. I was in the store the other day, walking through Macy's, and I noticed that the alligator appliqué is back on polo shirts.
Oh, okay.
Lacoste is the name of the brand. And lo and behold, there it was on an $89 polo shirt, 100% cotton, made in Bangladesh or wherever. $89. And everything old is new again.
I did notice about 40,000 Bangladeshi garment workers went on strike a few months ago.
Well, it's like what Sandra said. They're beginning to want living wages. So it's about time for everybody to pack up and leave China, and leave Bangladesh and go to somewhere where people are even more desperate. I don't know, Niger, the Congo, Nigeria, Liberia, perhaps.
Our prison system. You know, they can get real cheap labor there. They've been using that for a while. Don't have to worry about organizing and what, maybe 15 cents an hour. So they're finding it. But again, it's, Bangladesh was a spot for them that was convenient, and it's good to see. Again, you know, that's rarely brought to our consciousness. You have to read kind of very small, journals like Dollars and Cents. They do great,
right,
progressive economics analysis. Anyway.
All right. Well, Preston, I tell you what, it's been a wonderful conversation. It's awfully good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise, Bob. Have a nice evening.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Preston is the Horn resident optimist. He's from Colorado. It's about 23 minutes before the hour, and I think I'm just going to there's a couple of stories that I think deserve to be covered, you know, that are outside the not a mosque, not a story. And one is just one is a eulogy. And maybe they're both eulogies. Now, the story that gets me going was published August the 15th in the New York Times. Headline: Petraeus opposes a rapid pullout in Afghanistan. And, you know, the first time I saw it, I put my little hand up on the crown of my head and kind of scratched it the way Stan Laurel used to do. Well, Audie, why do you suppose that is? General David H. Petraeus, the commander of American and NATO forces, began a campaign on Sunday to convince an increasingly skeptical public that the American-led coalition can still succeed here, despite months of setbacks, saying he had not come to Afghanistan to preside over a graceful exit. No, he came to Afghanistan to preside over an entirely ungraceful exit and maybe an ass-beating along the way. Because you do realize we're getting our asses beat over there. It's what happens when imperial countries invade other people's countries, and the other people in the country don't want you there. You wind up getting your ass beaten unless you're willing to commit something on the order of genocide. No, General Petraeus opposes a rapid pullout in Afghanistan, but we've got our troops out of Iraq, right? Yay! Not so much, because a bunch of them are going to where? Afghanistan! It's like some sort of poisonous, heartbreaking, sickening rapid transit line from one killing field to another. In an hour-long interview with the New York Times, the general argued against any precipitous withdrawal of forces in July 2011. See, we've set that date, and he still don't want to leave. The date set by President Obama to begin at least a gradual reduction of the 100,000 troops on the ground. There are more like 130,000, but who's counting? General Petraeus said it was only in the last few weeks that the war plan had been fine-tuned and given the resources that it required. For the first time, he said, we will have what we have been working to put in place for the last year and a half. Jesus, now what? You know, I guess generals never want to leave a field of battle because, well, you know, for a general, it's fun. I mean, you get to put on your snappy war-fighting clothes and sit there in air-conditioned comfort and maybe go out in your helicopter once in a while and, you know, and visit the schmucks, I mean, the troops that are doing your grunt work. Yeah, see, they're not schmucks to me, but they are to the General Petraeuses of the world. And it's fun. Now, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair messed, Mr. President! But, you know, where does David Petraeus go when it's over? America's top military brass are all basically Frank Burns. All the fun ends with the war. You know, at least General George Patton had the common decency to admit that he loved it. God help me, I do love it so. Not so much the rest. No, we're defending America. No, you're not. You remember? Do you remember the story a couple of months back about how teams of American scientists have recently determined that Afghanistan is one of the richest countries in the world in terms of mineral resources? Remember that? They've got everything. They've got lithium and cadmium and barium and they got everything that we could possibly want. But it'll take decades to develop their industrial infrastructure. Remember that? I remember that. I remember it well. David Gregory asked General Petraeus on Meet the Prestitutes whether, General Petraeus made it a little squishy about whether he might recommend bypassing the withdrawal in July 2011 that isn't a full withdrawal in the first place. The President and I sat down in the Oval Office and he expressed very clearly that what he wants from me is my best professional military advice. And of course, his best professional military advice is, I want to stay, please. This is fun. The President didn't send me over here to seek a graceful exit, said General Petraeus. My marching orders, you haven't marched into 30 freaking years, come on. My marching orders are to do all that is humanly possible to help us achieve our objective, which is, oh, wait, the resources. The rich, they are filthy rich with resources. And now this, dateline, the same day, August the 15th, 2010, Kabul, Afghanistan, reported via Reuters. Afghanistan said on Sunday it had discovered an oil field with an estimated 1.8 billion barrels in the north of the war-ravaged country, where U.S. and other foreign forces are trying to tame a Taliban-led insurgency. The discovery of the basin between northern Balkh and Shibirgan provinces was made after a survey conducted by Afghan and international geologists, said Jawad Omar, a spokesman for the Ministry of Mines. I do not know its price in the market, but the initial survey says there are 1.8 billion barrels of oil, and I think there will be more than what it is estimated, he told Reuters. Omar gave no more details on how the estimates were made. Well, now that says something, doesn't it? But said the country will offer the reserves for development along with other minerals in the coming months. Afghanistan hopes that untapped mineral deposits valued at $3 trillion, all this can be yours, could help reduce the need to rely on Western cash for bankrolling its impoverished economy. Western cash. Oh, look, there's that Western thing again. Wah, wah, wah. That Sandra was talking about earlier. Western cash for bankrolling its impoverished economy and for its soldiers to maintain security when foreign troops draw down numbers. because we do remember that the Afghan army had its ass handed about maybe a couple of weeks ago. David in Tennessee noting, there will always be 50,000 regular military in Iraq in non-combat roles. You gotta love that. Army guys in non-combat roles. Then why do we need army guys if they're in non-combat roles? Says David, really? Non-combat? Really? B, all the regular military that leaves will be replaced by mercenaries, civilian contractors. Yes, civilian contractors. Mercenaries. So I saw those two stories, and I just felt once again like I was being had. In the interview with the New York Times, General Petraeus also suggested that he would resist any large-scale or rapid withdrawal of American forces. By God, we'll dig in and fight till we die to the last man. No, he didn't say that. If the Taliban believes that will happen, he said, they are mistaken. This is the quote. Clearly, the enemy is fighting back, sees this as a very pivotal moment, believes that all he has to do is outlast us through this fighting season. That is just not the case. Don't want to leave. Ain't going to leave. Can't make me. Why do you suppose news releases like the Reuters story comes out on the same day as the General Petraeus don't want to leave Afghanistan story? What was Hamid Karzai before he became the entirely corrupt and hopeless and inept president of Afghanistan? Oh, that's right. He was an oil company executive with Unocal. Hey, guys, you're not leaving, are you? Oh, God, hey, turn around. Guys, I got some oil over here. Look, I got reports. 1.8 billion gallons. Barrels. I didn't say gallons. I said barrels. I got 1.8 billion barrels over here. Guys, come back. And as sure as mushrooms after a spring rain, the American military and the American business interests and the international trans-global corporations' pink little ears perk up. You got what, Hamid? You say you got some oil? Now, Hamid, what did Mama tell you about lying? Wait, let me see that report. Wait, so we got 3 trillion in untapped minerals, and we got 1.8 billion barrels of oil? Somebody get David Petraeus on the phone. Boy, you ain't leaving! Oh, goody. I didn't want to in the first place. No, we don't want to in the first place. Because somewhere along the way, the General David Petraeuses and the like and have gotten it into their head that Afghanistan is now ours. And they will hang on to that poor, benighted, mistreated country to the exclusion of all other things. If the entire United States of America collapses, they will be happy if they are just still in Afghanistan, because we'll be getting protected. Yeah, that's right, Sparky. The only problem is we're not getting protected. As Preston noted, the Taliban ain't got nothing on transnational corporate energy dealers. They're willing to poison the whole world to get some more of that phony baloney money that they still haven't figured out a way to eat or drink. No. And those of us on the ground, we can shut up and salute, or we can damned well just die. Sure we can. We can die like Elbert Jovante Woods. That name probably doesn't mean much to you, but it broke my heart when I read it. Elbert Jovante Woods died this past Saturday. For the most part, Elbert Jovante Woods was a picture of health. He was a football player. Played cornerback on his high school team. Oh, he was quick. And he had talent. He went to practice every day. Had dedication and passion for the game. Full of life, as we like to say. Elbert Jovante Woods is dead. For while he was healthy for the most part, there was one way in which he was most definitely not healthy. Elbert Jovante Woods, you see, had asthma. His daddy is well known in the Cincinnati area, because his daddy was a hero in the Cincinnati area. If your memory goes back this far, you may remember something called the Icky Shuffle. Icky Woods was, for a fairly brief time, the focus of a very bright and adoring light that shone upon him. And 16 years ago, he and his wife got a son. And when Icky left the Bengals, when his playing time was over, he stayed in the Cincinnati area. Because Cincinnati had been good to him, and he had made Cincinnati proud. And so he raised his son as fathers do, and took him to the doctor when he got sick. And they said, "Mr. Woods, your son has asthma." And a week ago yesterday, he came home from football practice, high school football practice. And a little bit later, at home, he collapsed, did Elbert Jovante Woods. Mama and Daddy had him rushed to the hospital just quick as they could go. And it was clear that he had had a severe asthma attack. And they put him, Elbert Jovante Woods, on life support. The doctors blamed the extreme heat and poor air quality for Elbert Jovante Woods' death. Dr. David Bernstein is a University of Cincinnati researcher, and he said, "We've actually had a lot of patients in the last week come in with exacerbation of asthma. We think it's probably related to air quality." Probably. Probably. Because you see, Cincinnati, Ohio has some of the most god-awful air quality in the nation. It is literally one of the worst cities in the United States for air pollution. It's ranked second statewide and 11th nationwide for the worst fine particle, or what is called soot, pollution. Ranked fifth nationwide for soot pollution. Now, where would that kind of pollution come from, do you suppose? From Meigs County southward in Ohio. And you can see it flying from Charleston to Cincinnati, as I have seen it. One after another, coal-fired power plants dot the Ohio side of the Ohio River coastline. And those power plants burn everybody. Come on, say it. You can. Those power plants burn coal. And they burn coal that comes from mountaintop removal sites in Appalachia. And they kill budding stars like Elbert Gervonta Woods, 16 years old. And Elbert Gervonta Woods had a senator. Elbert Gervonta Woods had a senator named Sherrod Brown. And Sherrod Brown just gave money to a man running for Senate in the state of West Virginia, who wants to make sure that there are more coal-fired power plants to slaughter the lungs of more 16-year-old boys like Elbert Gervonta Woods. I literally wept when I read his story, and my heart goes out, and I'm sure all of the Horn family sends its profound sadness and sympathy to Icky Woods and his family. And this from A.E. Houseman. The time you won your town the race, we chaired you through the marketplace. Man and boy stood cheering by, and home we brought you shoulder high. Today, the road all runners come shoulder high, we bring you home and set you at your threshold down, townsman of a stiller town. Smart lad, to slip betimes away from fields where glory does not stay, and early though the laurel grows, it withers quicker than the rose. Eyes the shady night has shut cannot see the record cut, and silence sounds no worse than cheers after earth has stopped the ears. Now you will not swell the rout of lads that wore their honors out, runners whom renown outran and the name died before the man. So set, before its echoes fade, the fleet foot on the sill of shade, and hold to the low lintel up the still defended challenge cup. And round that early laureled head will flock to gaze the strengthless dead, and find unwithered on its curls the garland briefer than a girl's. How many Elbert Gervonta Woods is this nation willing to tolerate as asthma becomes an epidemic in this country that we need not suffer? We have asthma in stunning proportions among our youth, not because they ate something wrong or that they were born with some defect, but because Don Blankenship needs to get richer, and because Joe Manchin needs to be a senator. And because Sherrod Brown and Amy Klobuchar and Harry Reid and Charles Schumer and Patrick Leahy and Daniel Inouye, representative senator of a far-flung Polynesian paradise, need power. Albert Gervonta Woods, what a beauty it would have been to see you race the sidelines, to see you run in the defensive backfield in some college game. But Albert Gervonta Woods, we're sorry. We're sorry. Corporate America and the coal mob, son, needed your life. So that's the program. Hope you'll join me for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. John Fox, our chief engineer. Ben Birch, who makes all the streaming go at whiterosesociety.org. Lottie, our moderator in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, who is now posting at Crooks and Liars. My head writer, David in Tennessee. And the hardest working, bravest people I know, people fighting for the lives, literally the lives, of the Albert Gervonta Woods of this world, that they may yet live in it. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
It's Thursday. This is live. It really, really is. And I'm thrilled to be here. I hate being away from the microphone. But first things first, this is an Agnes update. First of all, thanks, seriously, thanks for all of you who have sent along your warm good wishes and your kind thoughts for Agnes as she prepares for surgery. She has been touched by all of your thoughts and remarks. She is at present resting uncomfortably. I say that because she hasn't had the surgery yet. After waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, we found out yesterday, which was, I guess, the only time we could find out, that, in fact, no, she couldn't have the surgery because her hematocrit, hemoglobin, red blood count, whatever, was too low to do the job. So for the last couple of days, last day or so, it seems like two, maybe three a month, I don't know, I've been force-feeding her raw liver. No, not that either. But seriously, she's had some like iron injections and stuff to try to raise her hemoglobin or red blood count or hematocrit, whatever, all up to where it needs to be. And so now the current situation is that it is now rescheduled for next Wednesday, which would be the 25th? Yes, the 25th. So that's next Wednesday will be a bust as well. But eventually it will come off. It will happen. And she will need your good thoughts, your wishes, and even your prayers then as much as she did this week. I don't know. I've never had really any major surgery. I can't get my head around it. You know, my job is only to sit around here and worry. But I can't imagine what it would be like to, well, okay, I'm going to, next Wednesday they're going to take a knife and they're going to cut me open and then Wednesday rolls around and they go, ha ha, joke's on you, we're not gonna, you got your blood screwed up. We're going to do it next Wednesday. What's that like inside your skull? It's got to be nasty. It's got to be unpleasant. So that's where Agnes is right now. That's why I said she's resting uncomfortably. So next Wednesday, no show. We'll do show Monday, Tuesday, tomorrow. Let's see, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, hopefully Thursday, assuming everything goes well and according to plan, and Friday we'll take the same approach. But we're here. I'm here. You're there. It's tonight. It's Thursday. And I got one thing to say. I'm sick of the mosque story. Maybe that makes me sound shallow. But I am. I'm just tired as hell of the mosque story. Because in the couple of days I've been off air, I've been sitting here and I save a story here and I save a story there. And I go, oh, that's a good one, that's a good one, that's a good one, that's a good one. And they are. They're all good ones. But, so what? Doesn't matter. The only thing we're talking about is the mosque story. The not-a-mosque story. The Muslim YMCA story that they don't have enough money to finish buying the building with, not a story, not a mosque.